Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Mike Rolston, CEO of Blencore Resources. How are you, Mike? It's good to see you again.
I'm good, Phil. Thank you very much for having me.
So I guess as a bit of a recap for new investors, do you want to talk us through the projects which Blencore Resources has interest in?
Blencore Resources acquired the Orum Cross Graphite Project in Uganda approximately 2 years ago. It's an exceptional project. It's got roughly 2 to 3 billion tons of graphite in the ground. The grades are good. The work that we've done in terms of met test work shows that it can be upgraded into a high value concentrate. It's basically proven as to be one of the lowest cost operating cost mines that we can deliver graphite into the world markets going forward. So we've been working furiously hard over the last 2 years to drill it out to a standard that's required for a feasibility study, to do the required met test work. And we're now in the sort of, I guess, final stages of putting together a pre-feasibility study. So the Orum Cross Graphite Project in Uganda is our priority project, and it's going very well. And then approximately 1 month ago, we announced the acquisition of the Akila Congo Nickel Project. And that is, again, located in Uganda, in northern Uganda, very close to Orum Cross, so highly synergistic in terms of location. But it's a project that a joint venture between SEPA Resources and Rio Tinto spent approximately $15 million over the last 5 years. So there's been quite a lot of geochem, geophysics, and even 19,000 meters of drilling down there. And it's identified a mineralized zone of nickel sulfide, which is very, very promising. And we thought it deserved some attention. So we were offered it on very good terms, and we decided to take it and add it into our portfolio, with the obvious knowledge that nickel is another battery metal, so there was synergies in that regard too.
So today it was announced that you have already started exploration work on the Akila Congo Nickel Project that was acquired last month. Do you want to tell us a bit more about the planned works?
Well, we hit the ground running. We decided that we wanted to get the boots on the ground as quickly as we can and start actually doing work. Firstly, because we've got 6 months to deliver a first stage in terms of our deal that we signed with SEPA. But secondly, because we actually want to show the market and show everybody that we are working the asset. So we've had our geologists in-house doing a review for quite some time, but we've involved some external consultants who have particular experience. And we're trying to put together a work program over the first 6 months and 12 months where we're looking at specifically at electromagnetic airborne EM work, which basically identifies targets for drilling. And then ultimately, if we can come up with some decent targets to go and drill them so that we can show the continuation of this mineralized zone and obviously start to extend this resource into something bigger.
I mean, I had a quick look at the SEPA Resources, some of the historical results, and I think there was like 31.7 meters at 0.29% nickel and sort of 0.1% copper, with semi-massive to massive sulfide zones at the base. I mean, do you have any idea of what the larger scale project could be in terms of, you know, JORC or anything like that?
Look, it's a little bit early to start talking JORC. We've got a long way to go before we get there. But I would just let people understand that there was a company called Sirius Resources here in Australia that has a disseminated nickel sulfide project, which is probably one of the biggest nickel projects in the whole of Australia. And that has very low grades as well. It just has considerable, size and scale in terms of what they identified and ultimately drilled out. So it's not to say that 0.5% to 1% nickel can't be turned into an exceptional project. It can. You've just obviously got to go and find enough of it to make it work. So our task, our objective from here is to go and find the extensions to this. Obviously, we want to hit as high grade as we can, and with a nickel price that's at record levels, the cutoff grades are a lot lower than they've historically been. But our job is to go and find a whole lot more nickel here, and some copper, of course, that comes with it, and build a project. And obviously, the success from here in terms of doing that will decide whether this is going to become a resource and ultimately a mining project.
Coming back to the Oran Cross, the pre-feasibility study, the PFS, is due pretty soon as well, yes? Is that right?
Well, by soon, I'm talking about 30th of June, so it's within the next 3 months.
Once that happens, what is the way forward then for the graphite project?
Well, the first step to get to that PFS is for us to announce a revised JORC standard resource, which should be coming out in the next 1 to 2 weeks. And that will show a considerable increase via our second drilling program that we did second half of last year. And that will form the basis of the mineable tons that we'll be using in the PFS. So first step is the JORC. The second step beyond that is our final stage met test results, which will show the quality of the end product that we're going to sell. And from that, we're going to be getting what's called technical data sheets, TDS. And those sheets go out to end users, and we start showing them what we've got to sell them. And on the basis of that, we start to form the relationships with the offtake partners that we ultimately want to bring on board and sell our product into. And obviously, in parallel with all of this, we've got a lot of work going on in terms of all the infrastructure that's going to be developed, all the plant that's got to be put in there to process this graphite into the concentrate, and every other aspect of it, including human resources, including logistics, and every other part of the mining operation. So it's a complicated process. We're lucky enough to have one of the leading graphite experts called Battery Limits that have done a number of the big graphite projects around the world in terms of their feasibility studies. They're working with us as our technical partner. And together with them, we obviously want to put out as good a PFS as we can do in that period.
Yeah, so you think the JORC report's going to make you smile?
I think so. Look, I can't tell you what it's going to be until we get the final numbers from our technical consultants who are actually doing the work. But all the assay results that we published over the last couple of months have shown, very, very good grades, hits. And we are expecting to have a considerable increment to what we had before.
Yeah, because if I remember rightly, you've only sort of accessed about 1% of the size of the resource. Is that right? So this is going to extend that, or is this still just that 1%?
Yeah, I think that what people have got to understand is that the deposit that we're talking about at Oran Cross is approximately 19 kilometers long. And at its biggest, widest width, it's about 3 kilometers wide, but typically about 1 kilometer wide. So it's an enormous, long, continuous ore body.
That's a big pencil, isn't it, basically?
That's an enormous pencil. And so we've picked one particular area, which is a very, very small part of that, percentage of that. And we've had to pick an area that we believe the graphite, well, we obviously understood from previous drilling and work that's been done before, but that's the area that we chose to mine, that we are going to mine from first. And then we went and did all the extensive drilling, including infill drilling, at the two deposits there in order to get the JORC and now the revised JORC resource as well. So, look, one can end up mining graphite from Oran Cross for probably 100 years, maybe even longer. Just depending on what world demand looks like, going forward over that period of time. There's an enormous quantity of in-situ graphite there that can be tapped into. But we obviously realize that the market can only absorb a certain quantity. And so we're planning our feasibility study to start by delivering 25,000 tons of end product into the market. And then we'll look to expand beyond that as the market can absorb more.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is, I think from our last discussion, and I've had discussions with other people, that actually it's about 50 kilograms of graphite we need for an EV battery, is that right?
Yeah, a Tesla uses about, a lithium-ion battery that goes into a Tesla uses about 50 kgs. It typically varies between 40 and 55 kgs, depending on the vehicle.
Okay, so it's a huge component to this battery, and yet the price of it hasn't actually gone up considerably yet by the looks of things.
It has started to rise. The graphite prices in the small fines market have gone up by about 25% over the last 4 months, which is starting to show some of the price incrementing that's been forecast by most of the leading analysts over the last couple of years. So we are starting to see the market awaken to the fact that there's going to be a supply shortfall of graphite, of that particular graphite that's used in the batteries going forward. The problem, I guess, is that it can't rise to incredibly silly numbers. Otherwise, the battery itself is going to be out of the price range, and the car itself will be out of the price range, and the EV growth that everyone's expecting will be largely dampened by a vehicle that costs $20,000 today suddenly becoming $100,000 in a couple of years' time. So there's a balance between what the prices can go up to. About half the price of an EV is the battery, about half the cost, sorry. So it's quite a definitely a big part of it. And any increment in the price of the battery, be it lithium, nickel, graphite, etc., does have quite a big impact on the price of the vehicle itself.
Yeah, and that brings us on to this other project, which is obviously going to be battery orientated as well, which is the nickel. Obviously, majors have spent huge amounts of money on this project before, by the looks of the stuff that we've read. I mean, they've spent $15 million on it, $15 million. So that is obviously going to give you a great head start, I presume, in your ability to produce nickel from this in the long run.
Yeah, I think in my experience of doing early stage resource projects and working with companies, it's often the second or even the third company that comes along that picks up a project that's had a lot of work done on it by other people. You get your own eyes to have a look at it, your own experts, and obviously utilizing all that data and the drilling and everything else that they've done. So we're pretty comfortable that there's enough opportunity here for us to go and do some further work. And look, a nickel sulfide project, if it does come off, I don't know whether you're aware, but most of the big nickel projects that are coming through at the moment are all laterite, which means that they are effectively oxide, and it requires a lot more processing, a lot more cost, a lot more environmentally unfriendly in order to turn that into the end product that's required. So nickel sulfide projects, which don't require all of that, are huge. They are the golden egg, so to speak. So we have that, and you know, it's all about, as I said earlier, it's all about going to find more of it so that we can ultimately drill it out into a JORC resource and take it from there.
Back to the graphite element of things now. I was just looking at some of the numbers. I think we've mentioned them in the past. There's 2 to 3 billion tons. And then I was looking, thinking the NPV is around something like 317 million, I think it's been mentioned before, based on 16.3 million tons at 6%. I mean, correct me on these numbers if I'm wrong, Mike. Where's the disconnect? You know, why is the company only valued at less or sort of around the 10 million mark when the NPV is up in the 300 million mark?
Look, it's a good question. If I had the answer to that, I would obviously be addressing why.
And when's the magic re-rate? When can we get the re-rate?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of issues there. The first of which is that graphite is not as well known or understood as perhaps, say, lithium. And you know, people think that lithium-ion batteries are made up of lithium only. And when they start to realize that there's more graphite in the lithium-ion battery than anything else, that starts to resonate, then graphite's going to get its day in the sun. Yeah, the rule of thumb in the industry here is that you want to have an NPV no less than three times what your CapEx is going to be. So if you have a CapEx of $50 million, you want to have an NPV of $150 million and obviously above if you can.
Yeah.
So, you know, my challenge is to obviously bring the tonnage down to 25,000 tons, but also try to make sure that and obviously bring the CapEx down as well, but try to keep that NPV as high as possible, because that makes it a standout project. And one of the ways in which we're able to do that is that our operating costs are very low, but also the fact that the cost, well, the prices for graphite are starting to rise, particularly at the coarse flakes, the large flake sizes. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, I can't predict what it's going to be at this stage. It's still a bit early, but I'm confident that we can have a decent project outcome. And obviously that's what we need to go to the next level. The second issue, I think there's a lot of people that believe that there's an enormous amount of graphite projects worldwide that can flick a switch and suddenly start producing. That's not true. And there's going to be very, very few, particularly decent graphite projects that can deliver into this particular market that start up over the next couple of years. It's a difficult product to deliver into end users. So that's the second reason. Sure. But I think from an internal project point of view, one of the things we realized when we did that preliminary economic assessment last year is that by having a much bigger project, and we were basing those results that you just mentioned on delivering 75,000 tons of end product as a concentrate per annum, the market fed back to us that it was requiring, I think, about $80 million worth of capex, and the market was trying to understand where we'd get hold of that sort of money. So our intention with this PFS now is to start, as I said earlier, start with a smaller quantity as 25,000 tons, which will require considerably less capex. So it's going to be a much easier operation to get into production. Yeah. And then we can build it up using cash flow that we make out of the project, using whatever other relationships we build up along the way, and debt or any other means. But it starts off smaller. It's much more doable, less risk. And I'm hoping that that message will come through clearly when we deliver the PFS in a couple of months.
Yeah, so it's a modular type.
Correct.
Yeah, and so, the 25,000 at sort of, let's say there's a $500 margin on this, and that's probably being very conservative, because some of the stuff is going to be sold at a lot higher margin than that, I would imagine. You're talking $12.5 million, so £9 million of EBITDA. Your current market cap is $7.85 million. So there is a serious disconnect going on here, even regardless of the nickel project as well, which obviously can add some value just in the sheer fact that you have it, never mind what's actually going to do. So, yeah, it's obviously good news today. We look forward to the updated JORC and the PFS that will come in the coming weeks and months. But this is going to be required. And as you say, with all of these battery metals, I think the world thought that everybody could just turn the tap on for copper, nickel, lithium, graphite, and all of a sudden, Bob's your uncle, you'd have batteries coming out of every place. But unfortunately, that's not the way the world works.
No, and I think you're going to start seeing a depth of relationship. At the moment, the gigafactories, and Tesla have obviously got the biggest one over in Nevada, but there are many, many gigafactories over in China, and Europe has caught up, and it's just flying at the moment. So there's plenty of demand for producing batteries coming through in Europe going forward, which is good for us, because we obviously would like to be selling into a European or North American market if we can. And I think you're going to start over the next couple of years, you're going to start seeing the relationship between end users. And I'm not really necessarily talking about the Teslas of this world, but I'm actually talking about battery manufacturers starting to really dig a lot deeper and get a lot closer to their supply chain, such as us, with the graphite in mind. So I think those relationships are going to be very important going forward. And I just want to stress that we are talking about putting a pilot plant in from next year. So I'm hoping we'll get a re-rating based on the fact that we are going into production. Yeah. And we will be one of those very few graphite producers that are ready and up and producing and showing the end market what we can deliver. And so as this market starts to really heat up, we'll be ready for it.
Mike Ralston, CEO of Blencore Resources, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, gents, and appreciate that. And I'll catch up with you again soon.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net